Our series on vanishing homelands has shown how the forces of change in the modern world threaten the future of entire societies throughout our hemisphere. In this final program, producers Alan Wiseman and Cecilia Weissman take us to the ends of the earth to look at a growing modern danger, not only to our neighbors, but to ourselves and the world we all share.
There is a Chilean legend that says that on the last day of creation, God was so tired that he dropped the remaining pieces in the furthest corner of the earth. When he looked down, he said, "I like that. Let's leave it that way." 1,000 miles below Santiago, Chile shatters into islands and peninsulas interlaced by craggy fjords. The peaks of the Andes rise out of a swirl of blue glaciers. On the windy fragments of the southernmost moors, cattle give way to flocks of woolly sheep. The shepherds who tend them descend from a rugged blend of fishermen, Indians, and Slavic immigrants. Their music tells that it is not the gaucho of the pampas nor the cowboy of the plains, but it is the sheep herder who inherited this remote land where South American ostriches roam the foothills and Andean condors hang in the purest air left in the Americas. But now something else is hanging even above the condors. Back home, I had heard an interview over my shortwave radio, drifting up from this end of the earth. "People here are frightened," said a man who lives near Tierra del Fuego. If the ozone hole over nearby Antarctica kept growing, more ultraviolet radiation would strike the planet. Someday, he worried, they might even have to evacuate their homes. Springtime. Ozone hole season in Tierra del Fuego, just below the Strait of Magellan. A sea of white animals, reeking of sweat and lanolin, flows across the prairies, driven by deeply sunburned men on horseback. Hey! Between these pastures and those on the mainland nearby are 3 million sheep, whose thick fleece is woven into rugs and clothing worldwide. But many ranchers here are troubled. In the last couple of years, their herds have been hit by strange outbreaks of mass blindness.
We are noticing many abnormalities we had never seen before. 2 years ago, we started seeing animals with tears gushing from their eyes. It costs a lot of money for treatment.
Luis Andrade, head of a Tierra del Fuego sheep cooperative, has sometimes seen thousands of cases at a time.
We are very worried. We think that the eye problem has to do with the ozone layer.
No one knows for sure what is causing this. Some blame a virus found in the milky eyes of affected livestock. But that has not quelled fears among some veterinarians that increased ultraviolet radiation coming through the ozone hole may have weakened the sheep's eye tissues and allowed the infection to take hold. Dr. Nadimir Maslov has inspected many of these animals.
Todos los casos históricos de ceguera reconocidos en esta región están muy asociados a meses determinados.
Historically, some cases of livestock blindness in this region occur in seasons where there is the most dust. But during the last few years, we have had blindness, not in months that sheepmen are used to, but in the months with most UV radiation, and the number of animals that had to be sacrificed is spectacularly high.
Another wave of blindness, this time among rabbits, has broken out north of Tierra del Fuego. A preliminary diagnosis showed cataracts. But the only formal ozone-related studies here so far, conducted by NASA scientists in 1987, were on the atmosphere, not on living organisms. So no one can really say if there is a link between sheep and rabbits and ozone. But veterinarian Maslov isn't only concerned about animals.
We feel like we are in a laboratory where the effects of UV radiation are being watched for the first time in a significant number of human beings. We are guinea pigs for everyone else.
Scientists know that ultraviolet rays cause skin cancer and damage to DNA in human immune systems. Yet little is known about what we can expect from increased UV radiation in the real world outside the laboratory. Until the ozone hole, there wasn't much reason to study it. Just across the Strait of Magellan, on the tip of the continent, is Punta Arenas, population 125,000, the world's southernmost city. With its gabled houses and poplar-lined streets, pizza parlors, and largely fair-skinned population descended from European immigrants, Punta Arenas could easily be a town in Maine or Nova Scotia. The first person I look for here is a man who I've heard is on a crusade to convince people of the dangers of ozone depletion.
Every unit is 2.1 microwatts of diffuse global radiation.
Bedrik Magas came here as a boy from Croatia. Now he's an electrical engineering professor at the local university. I find Magas, a tall, pale man wearing dark sunglasses, holding a metal box the size of a pack of cigarettes.
It's a small UV radiation meter, so if you point it to the sun, it shows how many minutes you need for getting severe burning.
I realize that Bedrik Magas is the man whose voice I heard over my shortwave.
So you're walking around with your own radiation meter now. How high has it gotten?
It's been more or less 92 units.
Back in 1987, Bedrik Magas provided technical support for a team of NASA scientists who came here to learn what had caused the ozone hole. He remembers how worry filled the scientists' faces as NASA aircraft found more and more man-made ozone-eating chlorine compounds over Antarctica. Now Magas shows me new data. Since 1970, the amount of springtime ultraviolet radiation hitting the Antarctic Peninsula just 600 miles south of us, at times, has doubled.
There's no precedent in known human history. It puts us into a very fragile future for the 50 or 100 years to come. But it's very difficult to understand a phenomenon which is not easy to be seen, which hasn't been measured. So finally, people realize that something's happening.
One reason people in Punta Arenas realize that something is happening is because Bedrik Magas has been telling them. For 5 years, he's been giving talks all over town about the ozone hole. This afternoon, he's invited to the home of a Punta Arenas artist and her family. Eliana Mayorga's white brick house is surrounded by neat hedges and flower beds. Inside, the walls are covered by her framed landscapes and portraits. Eliana's daughter, Patricia Stambuk, is here with her husband and children. We sit around the coffee table. Eliana serves cookies and Coca-Cola and tiny glasses of pisco, the traditional liqueur made from white Chilean grapes. Then Bedrik takes out his slide projector.
Buenas tardes, damas y caballeros.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is talk number 46 of a series that may never end about problems of the ozone layer.
Sobre el problema de la capa de ozono. Bueno, la Antártica es el lugar del planeta que tiene mayor frío.
Bedrik projects a computer-generated color rendition of the most recent ozone hole on the wall. Its center is inky black. He explains how chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, the chemicals long used in refrigeration, styrofoam cups, and still in some countries in aerosol sprays, float into the Earth's stratosphere. There, sunlight frees their chlorine atoms. The chlorine, in turn, attacks the ozone that protects us from those same ultraviolet rays. Now, with millions of tons of CFCs still drifting skyward, conditions will worsen for at least the next decade. Each spring, satellite images show the elongated ozone hole, which rotates like a propeller, getting bigger. Sometimes, like several days during last October, Maga says, it sweeps right over Punta Arenas. More and more, Bedrick Magas is finding that people here are growing frightened. Now, Ileana asks us to come outside. She wants to show us something.
Pase, tenga la onda.
Gracias.
Mire, mire esta. Esta es de este año.
Here are my roses. Look at this one. It's burning up. It won't blossom. The bud is abnormal. It should have a softer red.
Ah, pues tiene que estar con un rojo más suave.
For the past 3 years, she says, her roses have been shriveling. She's sure it's because of the increasingly intense sun.
And now my grapes. I protect them, but they burn. Before, they never did. But look at the yellow leaves up top.
Just that morning, a horticulture expert at the local university had shown me several specimens, including a patch of cucumbers, which are known to be sensitive to ultraviolet. Their leaves were also yellow. He didn't know about sheep or rabbit eyes, he told me, but he knew plants. Each spring now, his have been displaying increased signs of what he now believes is UV damage. Everyone in this group nods when I explain what the horticulture specialist had told me. All of them, it seems, are convinced that something has changed here.
The temperature is going up. Lakes in the Pampas are drying.
The glaciers are receding all over Patagonia.
Flamingos are spending the winter here. They never did before.
We're seeing strange things. Something's going on.
Patricia Stambuk puts an arm around her daughter, Paz, and pulls her close.
Nosotros se vi algo de lo que nos sentíamos orgullosos, era de tener una naturaleza limpia, sana.
There was one thing we were always proud of. This was a clean, natural place, healthy. We thought this was the lost paradise, one step from Antarctica. But now, we are one step from having the worst disaster over our heads. What a difference in so short a time. We thought that nothing could reach us, nothing. For example, like Chernobyl, which contaminated the food in Europe. But the sad part is that we, at the end of the earth, poor, underdeveloped people, least responsible for this, may be the most affected. It doesn't seem fair.
Back inside, Bedrick reminds them that some of the changes could be due to climate cycles or global warming. However, he adds, ozone loss is now a fact. And no one in Chile really knows what it will bring. If I lived on the edge of the ozone hole, I'd be nervous too. Nevertheless, some people say that Bedrick Magas is a nut, that even with the springtime ozone hole, Punta Arenas doesn't receive as much year-round ultraviolet as hotter parts of the globe. But I soon learn that the suspicions of people in southern Chile are being taken more and more seriously. On a park bench in Santiago, the nation's capital city, I meet with molecular biologist Sergio Cabrera, head of Chile's National Science and Technology Foundation. It's a Sunday and surprisingly hot for late spring.
There is concern, not just about sheep, but about the shepherds themselves, who spend 10 hours a day outside. There are signs that their lower lips are being affected. That is described in the literature as an effect of excessive UV radiation.
Como una producto de radiación ultravioleta excesiva.
Most of the people here strolling the grassy banks of the Mapocho River wear light sport shirts and shorts. So does Dr. Cabrera. I ask him if, this far north of the ozone hole, he feels a lot safer. He shakes his head.
As summer comes and the ozone hole of Antarctica breaks up, chunks of ozone-poor air begin to float northward. For the next 40 days, the ozone layer will grow thinner over at least 4/5 of our country. Ultraviolet radiation will increase by around 20%.
Dr. Cabrera tells me he worries especially for poor people in Chile who can't afford protective lotion for their children. Dermatologists now know that a few severe burns before age 18 can mean skin cancer later. But Cabrera has another concern. From kiwi fruit to grapes and apples, exports of fruit have become Chile's most successful enterprise.
Vamos a tener problemas por disminución de ozono.
With the ozone layer diminishing, we'll have problems with crops. Some fruit growers are already blaming the lower production on UV radiation.
He speaks of recent testimony before the United States Senate. Over half the farm crops tested in laboratories thus far, from cucumbers to soybeans to several strains of rice, the world's most important food, are sensitive to heightened levels of ultraviolet light. Cabrera adds that the recent international agreements to more rapidly phase out the chemicals causing ozone depletion may not be fast enough.
We have to make decisions now. We can't wait another minute more.
No podemos esperar ni un momento más.
Scientists first realized in 1974 that man-made chlorine compounds could endanger the stratospheric ozone layer. But nearly 15 years passed before world governments agreed to start eliminating CFCs. By then, much damage to the atmosphere had already occurred. Now what's needed is to find out how ozone depletion will eventually affect living things in the real world. ...600 miles south of Tierra del Fuego, thousands of Adelie penguins, their backs dusted with snow, engage in raucous courtship. Here, on an island just off the mountainous Antarctic Peninsula, research into UV's impact on living systems has finally begun in earnest. Palmer Station is a U.S. scientific base in a region that is home to penguins, humpbacked whales, giant soaring petrels, cormorants, and leopard seals. In this tide pool, several tons of zeppelin-shaped elephant seals, big as Volkswagens, watch marine biologist Deneb Kerentz.
Certainly in the beginning of the season, we were tracking ozone every day and, you know, just watching it go up and down.
She's actually wearing a thick polar cap, a red Gore-Tex suit, dark sunglasses, and number 25 sunscreen. Among the loose chunks of floating ice, Kerentz hunts for sea urchins and starfish. She wants to see if their cells can produce natural sun-blocking compounds, the invertebrate equivalent of a suntan, to protect themselves against UV rays.
The fact that a lot of these organisms are actually capable of withstanding some UV exposure is good news, but we do know that some organisms are affected.
Kerentz is concerned that increased levels of UV may eventually exceed some organisms' threshold of defense.
As far as I'm concerned, any effect would be unacceptable. What's happening here can very easily affect other parts of the world's oceans.
Last year, Deneb Kerentz took part in the first major study of the ozone hole's effects on living organisms. It involved tiny phytoplankton, the primary link in the world's food chain.
These plants and animals are coming out of darkness. I mean, they've just been through this entire winter with very little light. What they would normally be doing is gradually adapting to the increase in light. But now you've got the ozone hole in there, and they're getting summertime levels of UV in the spring.
Phytoplankton are food for billions of shrimp-like creatures called krill, which form the main diet of penguins, which in turn are eaten by leopard seals and whales. Kerentz and her colleagues have now shown that growth and reproduction of phytoplankton in Antarctic waters drops up to 12% under the ozone hole. Their experiments provide the first hard evidence that ozone depletion translates into real losses in nature. The next step is to find out how this loss is magnified as it tumbles through the food chain.
Where are we headed, Ray?
We're going to go right out into the middle of Arthur Harbor, and we're going to test a CTD. That's a device for measuring conductivity, temperature, and depth.
Optical physicist Ray Smith, who worked with Deneb Kurentz on the phytoplankton study, takes me out on a research boat.
You want to run the fish finder?
An instrument Smith designed proved that UV can affect marine life up to 35 meters below the surface, reducing their chances of swimming out of harm's way. For plants, he says, it's even worse.
If you're a human being, you can put on sunscreen, you can wear dark glasses, you can wear clothes, you can put on a hat, you can protect yourself. But if you're a plant, you have to have photosynthetic available radiant energy in order to grow. So essentially, plants can't wear sunglasses is the bottom line.
Because these studies didn't begin until after serious ozone depletion was discovered, the amount of damage to the ecosystem that has already occurred is unknown.
We're carrying on big, uncontrolled experiments that we simply do not know where we're going or what the answers are. And I'm saying this now not as a scientist, but just as somebody who is interested in this globe existing a while.
Back in Punta Arenas, pharmacies advertise ozone hole strength sunblock creams over the radio of my rental car. Optical shop windows display sunglasses for babies. Newspaper headlines announce that 31 tourist groups have canceled visits, citing fears of ozone depletion.
El intendente regional Roque Tomás Scarpa calificó de terroristas.
Then I hear a newscast. The regional governor is furious because Bedrick Magas was quoted in the press comparing the ozone hole to AIDS coming from the sky. The governor brands this kind of rhetoric as irresponsible eco-terrorism, bent on scaring off developers who would bring progress to their far-flung region. But that night, I meet several citizens who think it's the governor who's being irresponsible.
We feel defenseless. It seems like economic problems are more important than people.
It is a gathering of concerned parents. One housewife, Iona Bolton, shows me a letter they sent to the local minister of education.
Pidiéndole que para el próximo año.
We are asking for an ozone plan next year, for classes to begin at 10:30 so that the kids are inside school during maximum UV radiation hours.
In a part of the world where people say that sunburn used to be a rare thing, they tell me of children who go outside to play in return pink as lobsters. One man, Oscar Riquelme, has a little boy covered with skin rashes. The doctor has ordered him to stay away from the sun. Riquelme worries that the UV problem will get so bad that his son may never be able to go out. How can I keep him inside for the rest of his life, he asks.
Many people are thinking of leaving.
El problema es dónde.
But where will we go? The problem is growing and will continue to grow.
Pensamos que va a ir creciendo.
I am Jaime Abarca, dermatologist. And a non-resident fellow of the American Academy of Dermatology, working here in Punta Arenas. The only dermatologist in the world within the Antarctic ozone hole.
Until recently, Dr. Jaime Abarca was caught in a dilemma. Even though more people were coming to him with stories about the worst sunburns of their lives, he was reluctant to connect skin disorders to ozone depletion. Then, Bedrick Maga showed him radiation data he'd finally obtained from a U.S. National Science Foundation UV monitor on the Argentine side of Tierra del Fuego. Jaime Abarca decided he could wait no longer.
We're not only receiving more UV ultraviolet light, but specifically the one that is more carcinogenic, the one that damages DNA, the one that can provoke skin cancer.
Although the ozone hole hasn't been around long enough yet to see a significant increase in skin cancers, Abarca tells me that's not the point.
I want to be very clear in this point because some people say we are not seeing many dermatological problems now, so there's nothing to worry about. But skin cancer takes about 15, 20 years to appear.
What he has seen is an increased severity in non-malignant problems, like lupus and skin allergies, and he's now convinced that this is due to unusual amounts of springtime UV radiation.
The fact is that there is a problem. This is not science fiction. I mean, this is, has been measured. Before, I thought that it was not going to go so far. Now, the question in this moment is this only going to stay here, or is this going to move further north?
Before I left Chile, I stopped by to see the regional governor, Roque Tomás Scarpa, who had denounced as alarmist the people speaking out about the ozone hole. He assured me that he recognizes that this is a serious problem. But, he added, we have to keep living and hope that God or a scientist or a God-inspired scientist finds a solution. Because if we get completely depressed, we'll lock ourselves inside, put black paper on the windows, and wait for the end of the earth. We have to keep living. But even as I watched Tierra del Fuego slip from view through the airplane window and mourned the possible loss of the endangered beauty here, something momentous was occurring in my own hemisphere. Members of the same NASA team who had earlier traveled to Punta Arenas to solve the riddle of the ozone hole were now finding even more destructive chlorine over parts of the United States than they found above Antarctica in 1987. I called Harvard's James Anderson, who played a key role in NASA's studies. We're all in this together now, he told me. All the people of the Americas and the world united under one increasingly potent sun and one fading sky. With Cecilia Weissman, I'm Alan Wiseman, reporting.